As we all continue to react to and reflect on the events in Washington, D.C. last week, Wednesday, and obviously that conversation, debate, and contention continues this week, one of the things that a lot of observers have noted about the law enforcement response to the riot is the very stark distinction between the way law enforcement in D.C. handled that versus the much more harsh way that they handled the much less violent protests regarding Black Lives Matter in the wake of George Floyd's murder last year. And that is a very significant part of this ongoing conversation. Dr. Debbie Strohman is a professor, an entrepreneur, and an organizer involved in the racial justice movement here locally, also the host of If You Only Knew right here on 97.9 The Hill. And she joins us now on the phone to share her thoughts. Dr. Strohman, thank you so much for being with us today. How are you?
I'm doing well. Thank you so much, Aaron. There is no doubt that people are still processing, and it's going to take a while. But to your point, there is clearly, and others, there's clearly a difference in terms of the response to peaceful protesters around racial injustice and then people who are coming to the Capitol to respond to what they believe was a fake election. And when I think about that, and having listened to a number of credible outlets and their reporting, one thing that came up is they said that because they had such over-policing or a big response to whether it was Lafayette Park, whether it was protests in D.C. around Black Lives Matter or even across the country, that they wanted to avoid that type of over-policing, that type of military presence. But to me, that speaks right to the bias, the difference in how you see brown, black, and white people lifting up racial justice, that your immediate response is that we need all this militarism, that we need all of this policing. But yet, when we're talking about a group of people that we know, it's been documented, that not only media knew that they were coming January 6th, but also our law enforcement, our military, our politicians knew they were coming, but they said back off. Now, there's a whole nother conversation going on as to whether or not those folks who said we're not going to have that presence, whether or not that means they were complicit. And I think there's enough research out there from the FBI, the CIA, and others who know that white supremacists have indeed infiltrated our law enforcement locally, state and federal and military. We know that. That's been documented. There's a big report about it. I read it about 10 years ago. And so is there complicity? Yes. To what degree? How high does it go? So these are the things that I'm thinking about because, you know, sadly to lose five lives and to have so much harm, so much fear, and to think that people could come to the Capitol and just in vain, it's just mind-boggling. Not surprising, though, but it's mind-boggling.
And then the not surprising part of it is a significant part of the conversation. Because, I mean, if you're law enforcement and you've got a protest coming, you've got to make decisions about policing and monitoring based on what you think is going to transpire. And I was trying to draw a parallel in my mind between what happened last week Wednesday and something else that I could kind of wrap my mind around. And I went back to the demonstration in Chapel Hill where demonstrators brought down Silent Sam, and local law enforcement got some criticism there for not being more forceful and trying to prevent the statue from coming down. But that was a decision on the part of law enforcement, I think, that if we take a little bit more of a hands-off approach, then maybe the statue comes down and whatever, but no one will get hurt or injured. And that's ultimately what happened. In this case, you seem to have law enforcement that, for whatever reason, made the same decision, but they made it in a context where you've got tons and tons of people on social media being very clear about what their intentions were going to D.C., and those intentions were not at all peaceful or nonviolent.
Well, you're absolutely right. And that's where people are questioning And I'm sure there's going to be investigations, and well, they're happening now, in terms of the complicity. You know, how can you have people state and create, I saw a sweatshirt, you know, listing the date, you know, this is what we're doing, and yet have no sense of what could happen next. You know, it's one thing to knock down a door and break some windows, but when you have people in a fanatical state, people who are screaming, you know, calling out people's names, the Speaker of House, where are you? Having those plastic ties for holding someone against their will. You know, there's been reports of that there were firearms, whether on people who were at the Capitol or in local, or in the cars that they came in, that there was a noose that was found. How can you, as an elected official, an appointed official, a law enforcement, policing, military, not think that this could go wrong? This could go really, really bad. And so, you know, another part of my reflection is, in fact, I woke up with this morning. How do we now respond to our Republican friends and family members? And I'm not talking about the Lincoln Project Republicans, because they're very courageous. But how do we respond to our Republican friends and family members who are now disturbed by all this Trumpism or the Capitol insurrection? How do we make sense of all that? You know, I do believe in forgiveness. Should we forget that they said or did nothing for 3 years? They did nothing. And now all of a sudden, you know, I don't believe in this, or we have people resigning and all of that. Now, mind you, they haven't apologized for what they did by not saying anything or agreeing with it, with 45 and his antics. So how do we navigate this? I'm talking about a divided country. This is a lot of weight, not only on President-elect Biden and his administration, but also in our governors, our mayors, our towns. How do we come back together, if it's possible?
Speaking with Dr. Debbie Strowman, and we've got to wrap up already, but final thoughts, where do you think we do go next?
Well, considering the ugliness, the evil that took place, in particular against brown and black people, and then the deep confusion that many poor whites have in the sense of supporting someone or a theology or whatever you want to call it, I'll just say a sentiment that brown and black people and women are out to get you and to take your jobs, and they're going to create communism and all that. I think those who are on the right side of justice, that we need to unify even more. We need to come together more. The time that we're spending trying to convince people that our way of thinking is right, or makes the most sense, or is the most healing, I'd rather spend that time working with people who already get it. You know, I think, you know, the Poor People's Campaign message that came out this morning, Reverend Drs. Barber and Theo Harris, they stated that these people who had a role in all of this, and again, not just past Wednesday, but for years, they've spent more time lying to the people than lifting the people. They spent more time lying to the people than lifting the people, especially the least of these in this nation. That was their statement. And so I think we need to continue to lift up those who are for the liberation of brown and black people, lift up those who want unity, those who see color, right? Because research shows we see color, we see someone's race within milliseconds, but we don't jump to negativity. We don't jump to fear, right? So I think that's where I'm going to spend my time, unification with those who want to be unified.
Dr. Debbie Strowman, thank you so much for being with us today.
Thank you.